A mile away from the Cottonwood Creek cabin, Morgan and Beaumont moved slowly, picking their way through dense stands of poplar, briar, and trailing grapevine along the creek bed.
What are we going to tell the poor girl if we find both her parents murdered?
We'll tell her we did our best. That's all we can tell her.
It makes no sense, Frank. Why kidnap the judge and his wife and daughter? Who would be fool enough to do something like that? There's no money in it. You gotta leave someone behind to pay the ransom.
What we're dealing with here is not about a ransom. It's got more to do with one party saying to the other, "Here now, you look and take notice at how strong I am. I can whip your ass anytime I please." These are bad men, Tyler. Bad as they come, I guess.
You think they're already dead?
No telling. Mercy's a friend of mine. We were very close at one time. I'd like to think I'd be able to sense it if she were gone.
And you don't feel any such thing, right?
No. I feel like she's probably still alive. I fear for her safety with men like these, and I fear for her honor. But I think she's likely still alive.
You got a plan?
Morgan turned to him in the moonlight. He pulled a thick black vine the size of his wrist to one side so Stormy could squeeze through.
These boys have already shown they have no regard for human life. They were willing to stand by while another of their lot abused an innocent young woman. They've taken a judge and his wife prisoner in such a way they're bound to have to kill him eventually. What else can you do with vermin like that but stomp them out before they stomp on you?
I believe you're right in that respect.
Morgan reined up and looked the ranger square in the eye.
All right then. As long as we're of one mind, let us agree on this plan. I say we burst in and shoot anyone who's not Mercy or the judge.
El Deguelo.
Deguelo.
The ranger was referring to the march General Antonio Lopez de Santa Anna's men played when he attacked the Texan holdouts in the Alamo. The old Spanish tune signified there would be no mercy, no quarter. The bright half-moon blazed down through the purple night and made approaching the cabin without being seen almost impossible. Dried oak and cottonwood leaves covered the ground, providing for an instant alarm if anyone tried to make an approach on foot. Morgan and Beaumont hid below the lip of the deep creek bed, just out of sight of the back door and less than 20 yards away. They'd tied their horses in a small clearing a quarter mile away on the opposite side of the creek.
You smell coffee?
I think so.
Sure makes me wish for a good cup before we start this little hurrah. After we're done, I'll help myself to some of theirs. Outlaw coffee. Likely tastes like horse leavings.
Morgan took his hat off and inched up even with the dirt ledge. He held onto an exposed cottonwood root to keep from sliding backward. Horses stomped in the dark trees nearby, but he couldn't see them. As he suspected, there was a guard posted by the back door. The man stood back in the shadows, under the heavy eaves, and it was impossible to see him clearly. Morgan let himself slip down a foot so he was next to Beaumont again. They were inches apart.
Unless I miss my guess, there's a guard at the front door as well as the back. Can you give a whippoorwill cry?
Oh, not hardly. They'd know right off it wasn't a bird as soon as I tried, that's for certain. I can do a passable red bird or a bobwhite.
Oh, we need some sort of night bird. Both of those are day birds. Can you hoot?
I reckon I can hoot as well as the next man.
All right, a hoot it is then. It's important we take both guards at the same time. I'll work my way up here while you move around through that stand of cedars to the front door. When you feel like you're in position, give me the best hoot owl you can. We'll both make our moves then.
Morgan drew the long knife from the scabbard on his belt. Beaumont quietly took out his own knife.
This is touchy, son. No guns if you can help it. Once we burst in the door, we'll make enough noise to bring down the devil. Until then, it's quiet as a papago. Otherwise, those poor souls inside haven't got a chance in hell.
Understood. Quiet as a church mouse.
A moment later, the ranger faded into the dark shadows at the edge of the creek bed. Morgan heaved himself silently onto the level ground behind the cabin. He figured it would take Beaumont less than 10 minutes to move around and get in position, and he wanted to be ready when the signal came. The guard at the back door had a habit of walking out a few steps every minute or so. He'd venture out into the open and peer at the shadowed tree line along the creek long enough to make him feel like he was doing something, then retreat back to the safety of the cabin wall, where he'd wait to start the whole process over again. Each time the guard moved out toward the creek, Each time the sound of gurgling dark water below helped to cover any noise, Morgan inched across the ground. He held the knife in his teeth and used his hands to drag himself forward just a few scant feet at each opportunity. It was tediously slow going, knowing Mercy was inside, but he didn't have far to go. By the time 10 minutes had passed, Frank was tucked safely in the shadows at the near end of the cabin. The guard was not 15 feet away. Morgan was close enough to smell him. He was an older man, maybe in his 50s, probably taking the little walks to keep his legs from getting stiff. He held a short-barreled Winchester carbine across his chest as he walked, completely oblivious to the gunfighter's presence. Beaumont's timing was perfect, even if the bird call wasn't. The clear hoo-hoo-hoo rattled the quiet darkness just as the back guard took a step out from under the cabin eaves. The man stopped, straining his ears to make certain the mournful sound he heard was really an owl. Morgan slipped up behind him in 3 noiseless strides.
Passable.
What?
Morgan plunged his blade into the astonished outlaw's belly, drawing it upward to sever his diaphragm before the dying man could draw another breath to cry out.
I said that was a passable hoot owl.
The old outlaw slumped forward, still clutching the rifle. Morgan caught him in his free arm and lowered him carefully to the ground. The back door remained closed. A moment later, Beaumont eased around the corner. He held his own blood-covered knife in an equally blood-soaked hand. There was a wild look about him, and he blinked as though he had something caught in his eyes. Morgan put away his knife.
You all right?
It wasn't quite like I thought it would be. It took mine a bit longer to go down than I thought it would. Kind of frazzled me, that's all.
Not the kind of thing I hope you ever have to do again. But you gotta put it out of your mind right now, you hear me?
I'm fine, really.
Good. Because we got a ways to go before we're out of the woods on this one. Now you see why I want you to let the Grizzlies do all the work when I get old and senile. No killing ever ought to come easy, but some kinds come a little harder than others.
Beaumont gave a resolute nod. His face was still pale, but Morgan had seen him in action before. He couldn't think of anyone else he'd rather have with him at this particular time. Beaumont's mettle had been tested before against Ephraim Swan. He would come through this scrape all right. Frank was certain of that. Morgan drew his pistol and took up a position on the far side of the split wood door while the ranger stood at the other, his back to the wall, his pistol in hand. Morgan put his hand on the wooden lever that acted as a latch. It was time.
Ready?
Deguelo.
R.D. Holmes stuck his filthy hat on a rusty nail behind the wood stove and brushed a lock of oily hair out of his equally greasy face. Purnell shuddered when the giant approached Mercy and knelt beside her, leering. He pushed her skirts up slowly and put a hand on the pale flesh of her exposed knee.
Keep your damn hands off her!
You shut your gob, old man! Don't you try and bully me around. I'm the king of bullies around here. This ain't your almighty courtroom. You hear me?
Holmes drew back to strike the judge in the face again.
For hell's sake, R.D., you got a woman right there in front of you and you spend all your time slapping on her husband. What's wrong with you? You caused the pompous old fool more hurt every time you touched a damn knee than you could ever do whipping his sorry hide.
R.D. paused, blinking slowly as the words sunk in. Purnell stood with his back to the wall, next to the front door. He wanted to sink into it, to disappear and leave all this craziness behind. He felt his stomach churn at the horrible truth the sheriff had just taught the greasy hulk of a man. He'd never met anyone as cruel and soulless as Rance Whitehead.
Why? Why are you doing this?
Mercy sat still and gray as stone in the chair beside her husband. Her hands were pulled back behind her and tied with the same leather cord. Tears streaked her face and dripped off the end of her nose. Her red eyes were almost swollen shut.
See there? You got them both going now. Stolen kisses are all the sweeter if you're stealing them right under a husband's nose. Ain't that right?
Will someone please quit talking about me and start talking to me?
Pony Crowder sat on the edge of a bunk across the room, playing a not-so-friendly game of poker with 2 brooding hired hands named Carlos and Miguel Fernandez. Between the two of them, the brothers shared almost a full head of jet-black hair and a doubly large dose of sour disposition. Carlos was the eldest and sported a full beard to make up for his thinning scalp. He took his poker playing seriously and glared at Mercy for her outburst. His younger brother tapped the handle of the fancy nickel pistol at his belt and raised an eyebrow at Pony. Pony nodded and looked up from his cards, and his eyes locked on Home.
Oh, R.D., I wish the hell you'd go ahead and do what you gotta do. Jeez, old Pete, feel like I'm with a bunch of yipping pups or something. Maybe if you get down to business, it'd shut the coyote bitch up for a minute so we could get some peace around here. I'm gonna get up and cut her loose in a minute. That way you gotta deal with her one way or another. Comprende?
Home put his hand back on Mercy's knee and licked his lips. The woman's head lolled to one side, and she looked sadly at her husband. Whitehead suddenly stood and grabbed his hat from the back of his chair. He walked over to stand directly in front of Mercy and the judge.
As much as I'd like to sit around and chat with you nice folks, I got a county to look after. Don't know if I'll be seeing either of you again, but Judge, I want you to know I'll take care of things when you're gone. Parker County and that pretty little daughter of yours will be in good hands, so don't you worry.
Whitehead, you worthless! I'll see you hang for this!
The judge yanked against the leather bonds. His broad face reddened from exertion, and his chair bounced impotently with his struggles. Across the bunk from Pony Crowder, a circumspect Carlos spread out a straight flush. Miguel folded, and Pony threw his own cards down on the blanket, glaring at everyone in the room as if it was their fault he was a poor poker player.
Monfort, I'd shut my fool mouth if I were you. The only thing you're going to see is R.D. here slobbering all over your wife. I reckon it's going to hurt you a hell of a lot more than it does her. I'll be back tomorrow, boys. Don't kill anyone while I'm gone, if you can help it.
Go ahead and get if you aim to go. You're as loud as a damn woman.
Watch these rowdies, Purnell. They're animals.
I'll do my best.
Pony suddenly rose from the bunk and drew his knife. Home jumped at the suddenness of it and jerked back his hand.
Holy hell! You're gonna take all night just to get started, and I won't get any peace.
Pony strode over to Mercy and walked behind her, brandishing the knife. He bent low, his drooling jaw next to Mercy's ear. He held the blade in front of her, only inches from her nose. It caught a glint of yellow lantern light and threw it around the room while he worked the knife in his hand.
Oh, I'm feeling a little bloody right now. I think I'll cut both their damn throats right here and now, just for the grins of it.
The wooden door was torn off its hinges as Morgan kicked it in. Inside, two Mexican men by a cot stood and reached for their pistols at the sound of intruders. Morgan and Beaumont each took one, and they collapsed in a flurry of smoke, blood, and playing cards. A hulk of a man with thin, greasy hair huddled behind the judge for protection, both hands straight up in the air in a sign of surrender. Two quick shots came from over Morgan's shoulder, and he knew Beaumont was taking care of business behind him. A door slammed as someone ran out the front. Pony Crowder stooped behind Mercy. A long-bladed knife glinted under her chin. His face drew back in a hissing snarl like a cornered wolf. His teeth gleamed yellow in the lantern light.
You best drop that gun, mister. I could cut through her soft little throat like a hot knife through butter, so you best mind your P's and Q's. Comprende?
I'm right behind you, Morgan.
Morgan let his pistol swing back and forth from Pony to the big outlaw.
Oh, please. Please.
Mercy's eyes were wide and her shoulders shook. The judge's head collapsed against his chest. Dark, thick blood ran from his nose and left ear.
You watch the big ugly one. I'll take care of the little ugly one. I'm thinking this is Pony.
Damn right I'm Pony. And I'll tell you what else. Me and R.D. are gonna slide right out of here, or else the little lady's blood covers the floor. Comprende?
I got it. Pony, you need to calm down a little and think this through. You can give it up and get out of this alive, or you can keep on this trail you're on and be dead in next half minute.
Well, if I'm dead, she's dead. You got that?
The outlaw only left a few inches of his face exposed as he peeked around Mercy's head. Morgan kept his peacemaker pointed at the edge of Pony's face. He could have easily shot the boy's ear off, even put a bullet in the side of his cheek. But he'd seen too many bandits put up a hellacious fight after they'd been shot in what should have been a lethal spot. Morgan knew he couldn't afford to just wound with the knife so close to Mercy's throat. He had to do the trick in one shot, an instant kill, no mistakes. Morgan needed a better target. He had to draw Pony out.
It's your move.
The razor-sharp blade bit into the tender flesh at Mercy's throat, and a thin trickle of blood ran down her neck, pooling at the collar of her soiled white blouse. The sight of it pressed like a fist at Morgan's gut.
I want you to listen to me, you ignorant son of a bitch. You got 5 seconds to drop that knife, or I'll start carving off little pieces of you until I get to something that does the trick.
I'll kill her. I got nothing to lose here. Comprende?
1.
Morgan, listen to me.
2.
I'll do it. I'm dead serious.
3. You idiot bastard. You're dead and don't even know it.
No one calls me an idiot!
Pony leaned just a little too far to the left. Morgan's shot took the outlaw in the eye and sprayed the room behind him with blood and gore. Pony listed sideways. His remaining eye stared in disbelief. The knife slid out of his hand, hit Mercy's lap, and clattered harmlessly to the floor only a second before Pony's lifeless body joined it. Mercy's body pitched forward against her bonds, and her chin lolled on her chest. Blood covered the front of her blouse, and for a moment Frank worried Pony had been able to make good on his promise. The soft rise and fall of her shoulders told him she'd merely fainted. Morgan took a step back, so he stood shoulder to shoulder with Beaumont, and trained his pistol toward the boulder-sized giant behind Judge Monfort.
What now?
Get to your feet.
The big man kept his hands high. He stood, taking a step away from the judge.
You the one they call R.D.?
That's right. R.D. Home. I work for old man Crowder. He sent me along to look after his boy.
Well, I'd say you did a hell of a job of it. Tell you what, Home. You any good with that pistol?
Good enough, I reckon.
You try to touch the rafters, or I'll plant you here and now.
The great Frank Morgan, huh? I expected more from the stories I heard. They say you're pretty damn hot with that colt.
Hot enough, I reckon.
If I go back with you, they're sure to hang me.
That's up for a jury to decide.
I don't think I could bear the thought of hanging. As big as I am, to drop it likely rip my head plumb off.
You are a heavy man. It might at that.
How about we settle this between you and me? Right here.
Holmes' hand dropped to the gun at his hip. He hadn't even touched it before Morgan and Beaumont each sent a volley of bullets crashing into the outlaw's chest. A big man can soak up a lot of lead, and R.D. Home was about as big as they come. It took 5 rounds between them to finally put him down. He teetered where he stood and blinked wide-eyed at Morgan and the ranger and dropped to his knees.
It's better this way. I really didn't fancy my head being torn off.
Morgan kicked at the body before holstering his pistol.
It is better this way. He saved us some time. In the county, about 20 feet of good hemp rope.
One of them slipped out the front door while we were taking care of the Mexicans.
That would be Ronald Purnell. He's a local lawyer, but he's in the middle of all this.
Morgan knelt beside Mercy and used Pony's knife to cut her hands and feet free. He took out his bandana and touched it to her neck, dabbing at the blood. She brushed his hand away, holding it for just a moment.
You're in a bad way. We need to get you to a doctor.
I'm fine. Isaiah's the one who's hurt. They beat him something awful and made me watch. They were touching me before you came in. They touched me in front of my own husband. Made him sit there and watch it. Then got mad and beat him when he called them cowards. The sheriff was here a little while ago. He's a part of all this as well. Victoria went for a ride with his son tonight.
She's fine, Mercy. Ranger Beaumont here rescued her and made a corned beef hash out of the sheriff's boy.
Did they? I mean to say, is she all right?
They hurt her, but that's all. I got there before anything else could happen.
Oh, thank you. Thank you both.
The judge stirred, lifting his head. He slowly tried to look around. He moved his jaw from side to side, touched it, and realized his hands were free. He tried to rise, but Beaumont stopped him.
Cowards. A whole lot of you.
Mercy immediately forgot her own wounds and knelt beside her husband, stroking his cheek in an effort to calm him. It was such a tender, private moment, Frank felt uncomfortable and looked away.
It's all right now, Isaiah. These men are here to help us. Texas Rangers.
His wife's gentle touch made the judge more lucid by the moment. Mercy used Frank's bandana and a bowl of fresh creek water to clean his wounds. The beating had rendered him unable to walk, but after a few moments, he began barking orders, and it was obvious there was nothing wrong with his mind.
What day is it?
It's Tuesday night, sir, about midnight.
Tuesday? Well, that's good then. The stockyard vote is Thursday. I was afraid those scoundrels had caused me to miss it. You there, what's your name?
Frank Morgan.
I thought as much. You fit the description I had in my head. Bit thinner than I'd envisioned you, but definitely fit the description. Is Whitehead among these bodies?
I'm afraid he left before we came in. Him and Purnell both. Three of the Crowder brothers are dead, as well as a good many of their hired gunmen. Whitehead's boy's in bad shape, but he'll likely live to see prison or a rope.
Your Honor, I'm assuming you'll issue a bench warrant for us to bring them in?
Yes, yes, of course. Consider warrants outstanding for anyone involved in this treachery. Is Victoria safe?
Mercy filled the judge in on Beaumont's rescue.
That's a blessing in any case. Purnell is weak, not much of a threat by himself. He's like a common garden slug. Biggest danger is that you might get some of his slime on you. There's going to be hell to pay with Silas Crowder over his sons, but he's nothing more than a sad old man when you cut to the core of things. But Rance Whitehead, he's a different story altogether. I've never seen a man so fast and deadly accurate with a gun. It's not just his accuracy that makes him dangerous. I believe he enjoys the killing. Swaggers around with his chest puffed up for days after he shoots someone. He fairly revels in it. That man is as mean as a cotton mouth and every bit as quick. Facing him won't be any picnic.
Maybe so, sir. But it's something I'm looking forward to just the same.
Rance Whitehead had heard gunfire as soon as he rode away from the cabin. Deep in his gut, Whitehead knew Frank Morgan was behind all this. He clenched his teeth. Without knowing how many men Morgan had with him, it would be foolish to face him tonight. But his day would come, Whitehead promised himself that. With the judge alive, there was no longer any reason to pretend. No fancy writ or paper was going to save Frank Morgan now. It was nearly 2 by the time Whitehead made it back into Weatherford. The streets were completely deserted. On the ride home, Whitehead had taken some time to reflect on his situation. He knew now he needed to get out of town for a little while. He'd socked away a sizable amount of money over the years and kept it hidden away in his safe over at the jail. Even his wife didn't know about that. Gretchen was a steady enough woman, but he couldn't trust her with anything involving his business ventures. She was too much of a churchgoer for that. Oh, she was more than happy to spend his money. Much more money than he could have possibly ever made as a lowly county sheriff. She never thought to ask where he got it, and he never thought to tell her. Up until that damned Frank Morgan showed up, it had been a pretty good arrangement. There was a light on in the jail window. Whitehead looked over his shoulder and shivered in spite of himself. Morgan and the others were a good hour behind him. He felt sure of that, but there was no time to lose. He couldn't remember who was working Tuesday nights, but hoped it was that fool Grant. Whitehead felt the desperate need to shoot someone, and it might as well be the idiot who'd let Morgan live the moment he came into town. He'd just flipped the horse's reins around the hitch rail when he caught a flicker of movement to his right. He froze.
I wouldn't go in there if I were you.
Who's there?
Slowly, like a ghostly apparition with a gun in his hand, Chaz Ferguson stepped out of the shadows.
It's me. Come to save your life.
Why the pistol, then?
Whitehead stood completely still behind his horse. Ferguson holstered the weapon.
I didn't know what you'd do when I came up on you like this. You got a reputation for sorting things out after the smoke clears. We need Devominos. It's not safe here for either of us. There's 3 armed Texas Rangers forted up just behind that door. The doctor's in there with them. I'm sure they'd love it if you just waltzed in there to them. Keep them from having to hunt you down, that's for sure.
What's the doctor got to do with anything?
You best come with me before someone hears us, or you decide to go do something foolish. We both need to make tracks while we still can. I got a room at a widow woman's house north of town. We should be safe there for a few hours.
Ferguson disappeared again into the shadows. Whitehead could hear leather creak as the dandy mounted his horse in the nearby alley that ran alongside the jail. He looked again at the lighted window and thought of all the money he had in the safe. With 3 armed rangers inside, it would have to wait. He had no choice but to follow. The sheriff caught up with Ferguson at the north edge of town before they cut west on the Poolville Road. He reined up his tired gelding and fell in next to the young gunman Sorrel. Whitehead kept to Ferguson's left, so he would have a straight shot, but the dandy would have to shoot across himself if they got into a scrape with each other. He was still a long way from trusting the pompous kid.
Now, tell me what business the doctor had doing inside my jail. Did they hurt the Crowder boy?
It's your boy. That sawed-off little ranger beat him pretty good. I doubt you'd even recognize him.
Did he kill the Montfort girl?
He likely would have, from what I hear. Didn't have much of a chance, though. Seems the daring ranger Beaumont swept in and shot Pete Crowder right between his papers. Killed every mother's son there except for your son. Thrashed him to within an inch of his life.
Will he live?
Everyone at the saloon saying he'll live long enough to hang. Sorry to be the one to have to break all this to you, Sheriff.
I'm not the running type.
What do you mean?
Oh, nothing really. I'm just a man who likes to weigh all my options. I don't see you in any of them. This is as far as I go with you.
Fine by me. I was just thinking you and me could go after Morgan. Tend to a little unfinished business, so to speak.
The only reason it's unfinished is because you didn't finish it.
That's all the thanks I get for saving you from those rangers back there?
Yeah, well, thanks for nothing. I ought to blow you off that bag of bones for all the good you ever did me.
That wouldn't do either of us any good at all. You can draw on me if you feel like you have to, but the best thing you can hope for is that we shoot each other.
Whitehead could see the dandy was right. There wasn't any money in a fight right now. He needed to save himself for Morgan. His head spun. He needed time to get his mind together. He wondered if his wife, Gretchen, knew about their son, knew about him and what he'd been up to with old man Crowder. When she found out, it wouldn't matter how much of a churchgoer she was. She would never forgive him. Ferguson sat steady as a rock in the saddle, staring at him in the moonlight.
What's it gonna be, Sheriff? I won't be an easy man to kill.
Neither will I.
Sheriff, that's exactly what I'm counting on.
Jared Crowder opened the door and gave Purnell a drawn look. The whole damned family had that same pitiful, used-up look, Purnell thought, but especially this one.
I need to talk to your father. It's urgent.
He's in the kitchen with my mama. I'll tell him you're here.
Jared stepped back and motioned him into the parlor. The lawyer took a seat in the chair across from the tattered sofa. There was a small writing desk next to him with a dusty coal oil lamp and a pile of papers. He turned the knob on the lamp to add a little light to the otherwise dreary room. The rows of photographs along the wall took on a frightening appearance in the long shadows cast by the smoky glass chimney. Purnell wondered how he was going to break the news to the old man that most of his family was dead. 3 boys in one night. He'd watched Frank Morgan put a bullet in Pony's head, and he'd seen Tom's body as he fled the Montfort house. He could only guess what had happened to Pete, but he'd heard the ranger brought the girl back, and the only live prisoner was Reed Whitehead. Silas Crowder came out of the kitchen, drying his hands on a frayed dish rag made from an old pair of red flannels.
Have you got them both?
There's been a new development.
I don't want to hear about any damn developments. You get your ass back out there and bring in those women. I want my boy out of jail.
But you see...
What? You sniveling little bastard. What is your important development?
Someone let Tom out of jail earlier tonight, Mr. Crowder. It wasn't part of your plan, but somebody let him out and now he's dead. A man named Frank Morgan killed him. The same man killed Pony. And R.D. We were there to take Mrs. Montfort, but he showed up and killed them both before we could finish. I only just escaped with my own life.
But you did escape. And Pony's dead?
I'm not sure what happened to Pete.
Just then, Jared came in from the kitchen with his mother. She was wearing the same yellow dress she'd had on the last time Purnell saw her.
Everything all right, Paul?
Crowder helped his wife take a seat on the sofa. He swayed a little on his feet, then took the spot beside her.
Jared... Mr. Purnell here says Tom and Pony went got their full selves killed tonight. For all he knows, Pete's done in as well. I need you to hitch up the wagon, go into town, fetch the bodies for me.
Yes, sir.
Jared took his hat from a peg on the wall and went out the door without looking back.
It was a tricky plan to begin with.
I'm obliged to you for coming all the way out here to tell us about our boys.
I'm really sorry about this, Mr. Crowder.
Keep your seat if you don't mind. I got some legal papers I need you to take a look at. I keep them in a box in the other room. With the boys gone, I need to change my will so Jared will get it all. Got to settle our accounts. I have to make certain Rebecca's taken care of.
As Crowder half shuffled out of the parlor, Purnell knew he should get up and run right then and there. There was no reason to stay. Crowder owed him money, that was a fact. But in his present mental state, the old man was more likely wanting to kill him than pay him. The lawyer felt for the pistol at his side and gave it a reassuring pat on the wooden grip. He'd not fired the gun in years. When he had, it had only been to scare some cows out of the middle of the road so he could pass with his buggy. He knew he could never have taken Frank Morgan, but an old man like Crowder, that was a different story. Without his sons around to do all his dirty work, what was he anyway? Nothing more than a pitiful old man with a crazy wife. Alone with the blank-faced Mrs. Crowder, Purnell couldn't keep from staring. She sat no more than 10 feet away. It was impossible not to see the thin trickle of clear drool that ran down her chin. Her hands were relaxed in her lap, but she rocked back and forth slowly in time with the tick of her head. Purnell wondered if she was aware of anything around her, if she'd somehow understood when he told her husband 3 of her sons were dead. When he came back into the parlor, the old man was no more animated than when he left, and hardly took the time to look at Purnell when he dropped a pile of crumpled and yellow papers on the small desk next to the lamp.
My will's in there somewhere. Look it over, and you and I can settle up.
Purnell took a pair of wire-rimmed reading glasses out of his vest pocket and took up the papers. Most were yellowed by time. Some were so brittle, they fell apart in his hands when he touched them. The top few pages appeared to be handwritten letters from Crowder's wife. Love letters written in a different time, when the two were young and vibrant.
Mr. Crowder, I think you may have given me the wrong set of papers. What are you doing?
Crowder sat next to his wife, a wan look of fatigue crossing his ashen face. The long-barreled black pistol in his steady hand was pointed directly at Purnell.
Don't be fooled by this rusty old horse pistol. Still shoots as good as it did when I was making my grub steak with it.
Mr. Crowder, please, let's think all this through.
Please? Is that all you can say is please? If you'd at least show a hint of backbone, I'd...
You'd what?
I'd nothing.
Oh. Purnell felt a terrible blow as if he'd been stomped by a mule. He instinctively put a hand to his belly. When he brought it up again, it was covered in dark, almost black blood. The horrible realization that he'd been shot washed over him slowly. Oddly enough, he felt no pain. But when he tried to get to his feet, he found he had no feeling at all below his waist.
Boy, this thing's a brute. Big old chunk of lead likely tore your whole spine out.
Purnell couldn't speak, and he had to fight to keep his eyes open. The old man fired again. Purnell flinched, but heard the crash of glass and realized it was the lamp and not him that received the second round. Coal oil from the lamp's reservoir covered the pile of papers on the desk, and flames jumped up immediately, spreading to the carpet and across the floor. Crowder sat beside his wife and gazed into the flames.
Everything I work for is done and gone. Jared ain't got no head for business, no stomach for the gritty work. He can sell the land. That ought to be enough for him alone.
Purnell could see that his pants legs were on fire, could smell the odor of his own burning flesh, but he couldn't feel a thing.
No one's left who's tough enough to take care of my Rebecca. I'm sorry, sweetheart, but the boys are dead, and they'll surely put me in prison or worse.
Mrs. Crowder continued to rock slowly, oblivious to the flames at her feet. Purnell looked on in horror as Silas Crowder kissed his wife gently on the cheek, then shot her in the head. The old man turned away before he could see what he'd done to his poor wife.
I see in hell.
He saluted with the smoking pistol before putting it to his own gray temple and pulling the trigger. Purnell sat and wondered if Jared would see the smoke, but decided the boy was likely long gone. The old man had given him plenty of time to get down the road. By the time he got back, the dry old house would be nothing but ashes, and him along with it. The lawyer blinked his eyes to look through the smoke and tried to make out the slumped bodies of Mr. and Mrs. Crowder. Flames already licked at the blood-soaked couch. He hadn't thought he'd go out like this. He'd always believed he might have been hung for his crimes, but he didn't think he'd burn to death. At least, this way, he wouldn't have to face the condemning eyes of the judge. He thought again of the pistol at his side. the flames, moved up his chair, and scorched his arms and face. He wished he had the guts to put the gun to use the way Crowder had. Purnell's hand rested on the wooden grip. He just couldn't do it. The smoke was so thick, he couldn't see anyway. It wouldn't be long. Judge Monfour was as tough as a fighting rooster, and though he still had trouble walking, refused to miss the county vote on the stockyard proposition the following Thursday. His head remained bandaged, and his right eye was swollen shut. He had to lean on Mercy to cast his vote at the post office on Spring Street. Rance Whitehead had not been seen in town since the rescue, so Morgan and Beaumont both stayed nearby and kept a watchful eye on the Monfour family. Stories and rumors about Whitehead ran through the area like a stampeding herd after his wife came, covered with blood and bruises, driving into town in her buggy. The battered woman refused to talk to anyone about what happened except the Reverend Armstrong, and he was one of the few in the county who could keep a confidence. Some folks said Whitehead had left the area to go back to Galveston, where he was from. Others swore they'd seen him sleeping in this barn or that, acting mad as a cow on loco weed. Morgan could believe the man had gone crazy. It wasn't too big a leap to think any man who'd lost everything was only one short step from losing his mind as well. Frank knew that all too well. But he couldn't bring himself to believe Whitehead had gone very far. No, he had a score to settle, and if Frank knew anything about human nature, Rance Whitehead was not the kind of man to let a job like that go unfinished just because he went insane.
Mr. Morgan, would you do us the honor of allowing me to buy you and your friend a decent lunch? I have a small proposition I'd like to pose to you.
Come, Frank. You simply must accompany us to lunch. He is a judge, you know. I'm not certain you're allowed to turn him down on a request like this.
Well, we'd be honored.
Beaumont was hand in hand with Victoria. In the hours after the rescue, the two had hardly spent a minute apart. This is going to be one hell of an uncomfortable lunch, Morgan thought to himself, but he couldn't think of any way around it.
You know, of course, that I have my views, but I'm not so much concerned about the outcome of this vote as I was about the dialogue that led up to it.
You could have fooled me 2 weeks ago, Papa.
Victoria? Your father has been through a great strain. Why don't we keep the conversation light for a change?
The girl opened her mouth to speak, but thought better of it. She smiled softly and put her hand on Beaumont's, which rested on top of the table beside his soup bowl. It was an extremely forward move, but no one, least of all Beaumont, said anything in protest.
Morgan, I need to be honest with you. When I learned my wife sent for you, I had grave reservations, to be sure. I've heard stories about you that would curdle a decent man's blood.
I don't doubt it.
Now, let me finish. We judges aren't used to being interrupted. I heard you were a hard killer, with a quick temper and ruthless personality.
Sorry to interrupt again, sir, but all those things are true to a degree.
Well, that's just the point, man. I didn't realize it at the time, but those are the qualities we need around here, provided they reside in the heart of an otherwise honest and law-abiding man.
The judge felt around inside the breast pocket of his frock coat and pulled out a silver, six-pointed star. He set the badge on the table between them.
Morgan, what would you say if I offered you a job? Now the Whitehead has stuck his foot in the sty, so to speak. We are in need of a capable sheriff.
I appreciate this vote of confidence, Your Honor, but I'm not interested. I don't really need a job.
Oh, damn it, man. Parker County was your home once. Don't you ever think about settling down and giving something back?
You said it yourself, Judge. I'm a hard man, but I am honest. And to be honest, I'm just not interested. You got good men aplenty around here who make you a fine sheriff. Fact is, I was planning to move on this afternoon.
I'm asking you to reconsider. The people around here could use a man like...
Morgan!
The judge was interrupted by a commotion out in the street. Beaumont was first out of his chair and to the front window in the cafe.
It's Whitehead. and he's buzzing like a stomp rattler.
Rance Whitehead looked like he'd been dragged through a mud bank along the Brazos River by a runaway horse. A jagged purple gash, crusted with dried blood, creased his right cheek from the corner of his mouth to his ear. His dark hair was matted and filthy across a furrowed brow as he stalked down the empty street. Everyone with any sense at all had long since found somewhere else to be.
You reckon his wife did that to him?
Frank Morgan! Morgan, you stinking bastard! I know you're in there somewhere! Are you gonna get out here so I can square with you?
He's been through the mill, that one has. Look at that. His shirt's about ripped to shreds. I reckon those stories folks are telling about his wife and him having a knockdown dragout are true enough.
Frank Morgan! Morgan! I'm gonna start taking heads off everybody I lay eyes on until you get your worthless ass out in this street.
Well, I reckon I better get out there and take care of this.
Tyler, please. You don't know what Sheriff Whitehead is capable of. Some say he's the fastest man alive today.
Morgan came up behind the young man and held up the silver badge the judge had left lying on the table.
Ranger Beaumont, I appreciate what you're about to do, but this is a county matter. I believe that duty falls to me. No need for the state to get involved.
Frank, you're not even over your last fight. I saw how hard it was on you out at the cabin. I'd be an awful poor excuse for a friend if I don't take care of this. Now, Whitehead is bad medicine, but I can take him. I know I can. I got right on my side.
Wrong men kill right men every day of the week. Anyhow, he doesn't want you. He wants me. Listen to him out there. If I allow you to do this when it's my duty and something happened to you, I'd never be able to forgive myself. And the good Lord knows I got a wagon load of things to feel guilty about already.
Don't worry so much, Frank. I can do this.
I don't doubt your skill at arms, son. You know that. You ever seen two buffalo bulls when they fight?
I don't believe I have.
Well, let me tell you. There's a lot of huffing and bellowing to begin with. But after it's all said and done, one of those bulls is torn up and injured so bad, he can't be helped. And the other bull, well, that other bull is dead. Get out of my way, Tyler. You got plenty of days left to fight your fights.
Mercy suddenly tore away from her husband and threw her arms around Frank. The judge stood still, watching. If his wife's behavior upset him, he didn't show it.
Don't do this, Frank. I'm afraid he'll kill you. I don't think I could bear losing you all over again. I got you into all this with that foolish telegram. This isn't even your fight.
Morgan gently pushed her away with both hands. He smiled and settled his hat squarely on his head.
I got a handful of fights left in me, but this one here is surely mine.
The sun was high when Morgan breasted the door and stepped out onto the street to face Sheriff Reed Whitehead. The buildings around the open courthouse square cast squat shadows in the dust. It was close enough to noon that neither man would have to contend with light in his eyes.
Well, looky here. I figured you were busy slinking out the back door. Or hiding behind that slut girlfriend of yours. Oh, don't think we don't know about the two of you. The whole town knows you had a thing going before you ran away.
Morgan stood still, watching for the telltale movement that would signify Whitehead was about to draw. He let the harsh words about mercy slide off his back without comment or second thought. Insults before a fight, particularly insults about an innocent woman, would not be tolerated. During a fight, Morgan kept his temper in check. A quick temper clouded the mind and wrecked the concentration. It was more than likely to get a man killed. There was no need to get upset when a reckoning was already so close at hand.
Oh, you are good thrashing for what you did to me and my family.
Suit yourself. Throw down your gun and I'll face you in a fistfight.
No. Frank Morgan needs to die in a gunfight.
You got no way out of this, Whitehead. Even if you manage to take me, this town will never let you just ride away.
I know that. I'm a dead man. But that's what makes this so easy. Men who know they're dead anyhow don't have a lot to fret about.
The sheriff's hand hung motionless above the butt of his pistol. If he had a telltale, he wasn't showing it. There was something in his face, something in the way he stood, that Frank couldn't quite make out. At first, he chalked it up to swagger, or maybe just false confidence. When he hit on the answer, it stunned him as much as a slap. Whitehead had a complete lack of fear. There was a quiet calm about the gunman that said he'd plowed this ground many times before and he was ready to go at it again. It was a look Morgan had seen thousands of times, every time he looked in a mirror at his own reflection. Brance Whitehead was not going to be an easy adversary. Both men stood completely still, looking at each other, searching for a weakness in their opponent. Finding none, they kept looking. They were less than 10 yards apart.
When I'm done with you, I'll have time to take care of the judge and your girlfriend before I'm finished.
You gonna get down to business, or are you just gonna stand there and talk trash all day?
Maybe I'll have time to finish what my boy started with that little whore.
Whitehead's breathing had been relaxed and slow. When he stopped and held his breath for an instant, Morgan knew he was a hair breadth away from drawing. Tyler Beaumont would later say he never saw either man draw. Their guns appeared in their hands simultaneously. Smoke and fire flashed from both barrels at the same moment. When the smoke cleared, both men stood, still facing each other. Onlookers held their breath, waiting to see what would happen next. Then, Whitehead's gun spun on his finger and fell to the dust. The tall man swayed, blinking unbelieving eyes before he pitched forward into the deserted street. Beaumont was first out the door. He kicked Whitehead's pistol out of reach and rolled him over. He looked up at Frank.
You shot him in the mouth! Straight through the damn mouth! Who shoots anybody through the mouth?
That's what I was aiming for. Got sick of listening to his trash. Don't think I could have put up with another word of it.
Beaumont stood when Frank came up next to the body. He noticed a long rip in the gunman's shirt just under his right armpit.
You hurt?
Morgan followed Beaumont's eyes to the spot and reached up to touch it with his left hand. He fingered the torn cloth.
Oh, I don't believe I am. Looks like it grazed my shirt. Luke's wife, Carolyn, is mighty handy with a needle and thread. Maybe she'll sew it up for me.
You were half an inch from taking another bullet. Inches away from dying, and it don't seem to bother you.
I reckon none of us are that far off from dying one way or another.
Whatever you say, Frank. Some of us are closer than others.
Are you certain you won't reconsider?
Nope, I don't believe I will.
Frank had a long list of reasons why he shouldn't take the job as sheriff of Parker County, but excuses appeared flimsy as corn silk when said out loud. It was best to just decline. Morgan gave the silver badge back to Judge Monfort and shook his hand.
Your Honor, this county is chock full of capable men. I know. I grew up with some of them. You'll find someone who'll fill the bill much better than I would.
Where will you go from here?
Well, I got a few things I need to catch up on. First, I intend to stop by and see Luke and Carolyn Perkins. They got him a new baby son. They're naming the poor little cuss Frank, of all things. It's a damn poor thing to do to a child, if you ask me.
Frank reached out to shake Victoria's hand. She took it, but smirked and tugged him to her.
You'd think I was a little girl and you were about to pat me on the head. Give me a proper goodbye, Mr. Morgan.
She wrapped her arms around his waist and squeezed, hugging him hard, and gave him a surprising kiss on the cheek.
I'd leave too if I thought you'd say goodbye like that.
Well, now, since you're not a little girl, I reckon you should dispense with the Mr. Morgan business. Go on and call me Frank.
I'll do that, Frank. Come by and see us more often.
When Frank tipped his hat like he was ready to go, Mercy suddenly broke away from her husband. Victoria stepped over so the judge could lean against her.
May I walk alongside you to your horse?
Morgan glanced up at the judge. Monfort gave him a smiling nod. There was no animosity in it. Frank wondered if he'd be such a generous man if the situation was reversed.
Give us a minute, Tyler. And then meet me over by the livery. I need to talk to you before I go.
You got it.
Mercy turned to face Frank when they got to the horses.
I'd given up hope of ever seeing you again.
I figured a man like me was pretty easy to get over.
Hardly. Frank. Frank, it really doesn't matter whose daughter she is, does it?
I suppose not.
All right, then. Don't let it keep you away. Now, I'm a happily married woman. That's the last time that will ever happen. But I hope this isn't the last time we see you. You can be a drifter if you want to, Frank Morgan. But don't let that make you a stranger.
You beat all I ever saw, Mercy Montfer.
Beaumont walked along with Morgan as he led Stormy and the new Palomino packhorse north out of town toward the Double Diamond Ranch. The shadows were long and orange. There was only about an hour of daylight left. But Frank felt the need to be on the move, at least as far as Luke's.
This is a fine-looking mare you got yourself here. I have to say, though, I never figured you for a man to ride a yellow horse.
I don't intend to ride her. She's a pack horse. Tell you the truth, I've had my hands full of dark-headed women for the last little bit. I believe I'll go with a blonde for a while.
Speaking of dark-headed women, I wonder if I could get your permission to court Victoria more seriously?
It's not up to me. I reckon you should be going to the judge with that petition. Doesn't matter what happened in the past. He's her father.
I know that, and I already checked it out with him. He said he wouldn't stand in our way.
Well, there you go then.
You know what Miss Vicky said? She said I still had to ask your permission.
She did she?
She did.
You have my blessing then, Tyler Beaumont. Just do me a favor and treat her better than I did her mama. Settle down and base your ranger in out of here.
Where shall we wire if she decides to take me up on a proposal? Down the road a little.
I'll wire you in a week or two. Maybe you'll know which way is up by then. You're so bumfuzzled right now, you'd likely give me the wrong date and time. If there is to be a wedding, you can feel free to tell Miss Vicky I'll be pleased to come back for it. That's certain. You remember that sad little excuse for a window in my room back in Amarillo?
I guess so. Wasn't much of a window.
No, it wasn't. Fact is, you taught me a lesson then, when I was looking out at the tumbleweeds all potty-like. Likely as not, you thought it was the shooting contest that got through to me, or the telegram for Mrs. Montfer. Truth is, it was you and your little lecture about the window.
No fooling. I don't remember saying anything profound.
Fact is, kid, I never was meant to be inside looking out any window. The good Lord made me to be outside, rolling along with the tumbleweeds and cottonwood fluff. I can ride by someone else's window every once in a blue moon, see them all warm and snug by their fire. For a minute, I think I'd like to be in there where it's cozy and all, looking out the other way. But that ain't the life I'm cut out for.
Morgan dug through his saddlebags behind him. When he found what he was looking for, he held the nickel-plated revolver he'd won in Amarillo. He grabbed it by the barrel and offered it butt first down to Beaumont.
Oh, almost forgot.
I didn't win this, you did.
Just take the damn thing. Consider it an early wedding present.
You think really she'll take me up on my offer when I ask her?
Well, if she doesn't, she's no kin of mine.
The good people of Parker County, Texas, decided it would be best if the railroad took their stockyard and put it somewhere else, namely Fort Worth, which was already gaining a reputation as being a rowdy cowtown with all the attendant vice and violence. Morgan spent 2 days with Luke Perkins and his large extended family. He looked in on his namesake and spent some time teaching Jasper and Chance to shoot down by an old clay bank where the noise wouldn't scare the baby or the milk cows. Both boys had talent, but they had a tendency to rush their shots. Frank suspected they were each showing off for their respective Fossman twin. Each of the girls stood a few feet behind them with hands over her ears. High on a limestone mesa, unbeknownst to Morgan and the others, or even to the scruffy cur dog that lazed in the sun, oblivious to the noise, a lone figure knelt in the cedar brush and watched through a brass spyglass. He was careful not to let it catch the sunlight and give away his position. Watching Morgan shoot made Chaz Ferguson feel lightheaded. He collapsed the spyglass and returned it to its leather case before rolling over on his back to look up into the cloudless sky. A cool wind brushed the thin blonde beard on his boyish face. Ferguson had watched from the hotel across the street while Morgan shot Rance Whitehead in the mouth. he jumped like a surprised dog when he heard the shot. Later, he looked at the body and saw the way the teeth had all been broken or torn away. As he looked, a deadly calm overcame his body. It was at that moment Chaz realized it didn't matter if the same fate lay in store for him. He had to play the cards that were dealt. One way or another, he had to face Morgan. There was no getting around it. Ferguson backed away from the edge of the mesa before he stood and brushed off the front of his fancy striped breeches and returned the Stetson to his curly head. Maybe Frank Morgan would shoot out all his teeth. Maybe he would kill Frank Morgan. None of that really mattered anymore. Some things were worse than dying. As long as the gunfighter went on living, Ferguson knew he would never truly be alive himself. The dandy climbed into his saddle and listened to the pop and crack of the shots over the ledge behind him. They didn't make him flinch anymore. He wheeled his horse and smiled to himself.
Frank Morgan, I do believe I'm ready.
The Last Gunfighter Manhunt is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2004, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, James Konacek, David Coyne, Kate Foster, Casey Platt, Christopher Grabehill, Jonathan Watkins, Andy Clements, Jeff Baker, Michael Glenn, Mort Shelby, Dylan Lynch, Jason Stiles, Tim Getman, Joe Brack, Colleen Delaney, Elliot Dash, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, and Nanette Savard. Directed by Ken Jackson. Book adapted for graphic audio by Doug Krenzlin. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton. Original music by Brian Patton and Johann Detweiler. Title theme by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed The Last Gunfighter, be sure to look for the series Smoke Jensen the Mountain Man. Available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. Keep listening for previews of other graphic audio thrillers.
The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
The demon dactyl came awake. It didn't seem such a momentous thing, just a gradual stirring in a deep cave in a far, empty mountain. An unnoticed event, seen by none save the caveworms and those few insomniacs among the bevy of weary bats hanging from the high ceiling. But the demon spirit had awakened, had come back from its long dormancy into the statue-like form it had left behind after its last visit to the world called Corona. The tangible, corporeal body felt good to the wandering spirit. The dactyl could feel its blood, hot blood, coursing through its wings and mighty legs, could feel the twitching of its mighty muscles. Its eyes flickered open, but saw only blackness, for the form, left standing in magical stasis in the deep cave, head bowed and wings wrapped tightly about its torso, had been covered by magma. Most of the fiery stuff of that time long past had bubbled and flowed away from the cavern, but enough had remained to harden about the dactyl's corporeal form. The spirit had come back to Corona, encased in obsidian. The demon spirit felt deep within itself, summoned its powers, both physical and magical. By sheer will and brute strength, the dactyl flexed its wings. A thin crack ran down the center of the obsidian sarcophagus. The dactyl flexed again. It stretched its great wings out to the side, clawed tips grasping and rending the air. The dactyl threw back its head and opened wide its mouth. It voiced the sheer joy of its return, the anticipation of the chaos it would bring again to the quiet human kingdoms of Corona. Its torso resembled that of a tall, slender man, shaped and lined by corded strands of taut muscle and sporting a pair of tremendous bat-like wings, 20 feet across when fully extended, and with strength enough to lift a full-grown bull in swift flight. Its head, too, was somewhat human, except more angular, with a narrow jaw and pointed chin. The dactyl's ears were pointed as well, poking up about the demon creature's thin tuft of black hair. Neither did that hair hide the creature's horns, thumb-sized and curling in toward each other at the top of the demon's brow. The texture of its skin was rough and thick, an armored hide, reddish in hue and shiny, as if lit by its own inner glow. Shining, too, were the demon's eyes, pools of liquid black at most times, but shifting to fiery red orbs, living flames, when the demon was agitated, a glow of absolute hatred. The creature flexed and stretched, extended its wings to their full glory, reached and clawed at the air with its human-like arms. The demon extended its fingernails, transformed them into hooked claws, and grew its teeth, two pointed canines extending down over its bottom lip. Every part of the demon was a weapon, devastating and deadly. And yet, this demon's real strength lay in its mind and its purpose. The tempter of souls, the twister of hearts, the maker of lies.
How long has it been? How many decades, centuries have passed since my last visit to Corona?
The creature remembered that long ago time now, savored the thoughts of the streaming blood as army after army had joined in delicious, desperate battle.
Selden and Actinomium.
He saw again the elf who had rallied the humans and the other elves, Terran and Denonial, who chased the Dactyl's armies back to the base of the mountain, Ada. Denonial himself had come into this cave after the beast, had skewered the Dactyl. Yet even in its death throes, the Dactyl had won the day, using its willpower to bring up the magma from the bowels of Ada. Denonial and much of his army had been consumed and destroyed.
I am eternal. I have returned. My physical wounds healed. What man, what elf will take Denonial's place?
Its thoughts turned from its enemies to those it would summon as minions. What creatures could the Dactyl gather this time to wage its war?
The goblins, certainly, full of anger and greed, delighting in murder and war.
The Formorian giants of the mountains, few in number, but each with the strength of a dozen men, and a hide too thick and tough for a dagger to puncture. And the Powries, yes, the Powries. The cunning, warlike dwarves of the Julianthes, the Weathered Isles, who hate the humans above all others.
A line of drool hung low from the Dactyl's mouth, as it considered its former and future allies, its army of woe.
I will bring them into my fold. Tribe by tribe, race by race, growing as the night grows when the sun touches the western horizon. Hear me, Corona. Your twilight is at hand. I am awake!
Graphic Audio proudly presents R.A. Salvatore's epic saga, The Demon Wars.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that hot Graphic Audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.